We're having a class in introducing the Seder night. The year was 1990 or 1992, somewhere around there. I was with a bunch of friends. We were young teenagers. And as we often did, we were having philosophical discussions, debating whether we thought Judaism was true or not. And at one point, I said to the other guys, if this whole story is true, why doesn't anyone ever sit us down and tell us, hey, this is true. This is just, you know, my father told me, his father told him, going back to Sinai. And I went to sleep that night feeling pretty frustrated. Why didn't anyone ever sit me down and tell me if this is so true? And I got up the next morning and it dawned on me, hey, isn't that what happens at the Seder? And the answer is yes, that is what happens at the Seder. What's happening at the Seder is we're telling the next generation, we're telling our children or our disciples, we're telling them, my father told me, his father told him, that this is what happened. This is what happened to the Jewish people. And so this night is really a very important night with regards to all of Judaism. It's aside from the night being the anniversary of the Exodus from Egypt, it is also the night when we have a biblical mitzvah to tell our children to pass on the tradition. Yes, we have a mitzvah to teach them all year long. But on this night, we have a mitzvah to tell them about the truth of Judaism, to tell them about the miracles of Mitzrayim, to tell them how Hashem appeared and took us out of Mitzrayim. Once in history this happened. One time. And so Hashem tells us in Parshas Vayeschanan that this never happened before. Haniyah kadavar gadol hazeh, oh, nishma kamo, has anything so awesome ever been heard? This is one of the pivotal points that are happening tonight. People sometimes get caught up in all kinds of nice thoughts. We have to remember what's the main thought tonight. The main point is getting that message across to the next generation through questions and answers, but that's the main point. And so we have to find a way to do it. And the Haggadah keeps instructing us. There are four types of children. You have to talk to each one the language that's going to match them, but you have to talk to them and get the point across. Sometimes you have to initiate the conversation. Sometimes they'll initiate the conversation. Sometimes you just have to give them a simple answer. Each one on his level. And so when we discuss the Haggadah, we have to first get into the right frame of mind. We're entering the Haggadah as an educator. Every one of us, we have a role. We have a job. We're going to educate ourselves. We're going to educate whoever else is there. And Haggadah teaches us that the best education is when you can inspire the other side to ask questions. And so we try. We do things that are unusual. We do things that will cause the children to ask. We're looking for them to ask. Now, a point to ponder, we are unique in that. We are unique in that we are a religion that encourages questions. We want them to ask. We want them to question every angle you can ask. Sometimes we'll have answers, and sometimes we won't. But we want everyone to be learned. We want everyone to understand, and to get as much of an understanding as they can. So, we're going to learn the Haggadah piecemeal, but I'd rather we take time to learn the story without the Haggadah, so that you know what to tell over. And our story really begins in many different points in history. The story begins really before creation, when Hashem said, I'm only creating this world if I have a people that will help propel the world forward. Bereshit, our sages say, for the sake of Reshit, which are the Jewish people, for that purpose, Hashem said, I'm creating the world. And so we have a job here. And then we have our history, our dark history, that really we come from pagans. Avram's father was an idol worshiper. And we purposely, we have a tradition that the Haggadah has to take on that form. Matril bignut umseyem b'shevach. We begin with things that are derisive. we describe how we our forefathers were pagans. We describe how we began as slaves, and God is supposed to take on that sequence from the dregs up to being the chosen people. And if we look at the Haggadah, we have the Kiddush, Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. We have the, call them the preparatory. We have the first, we're going to have four cups of wine. So we know we have the Kiddush, and then we wash for the dipping of the vegetable. The whole point of the dipping of the vegetable is so the kid is going to ask, hey, wait a second, what are you doing? And then we split a matzah, which is also to get the kid to ask. It's like you're cutting the bread and you're not handing any out. What's going on here? So we cut the bread, and part of the idea is that the matzah is lechem oni. The lechem is the matzah is poor man's bread, and we are reenacting two things: our state of poverty and our state of redemption. So in the matzah, that's poverty. Matzah is without any spices. It's the poorest bread you could have, flour and water. And even when you eat it, you don't eat a whole matzah. You cut the matzah in half, like a poor man always has to keep some for tomorrow. So we do that. And then we enter Maggid, which is the recounting of everything that happened. We're going to recount it, end the Maggid with the meal. And then after the meal, we're going to discuss Hallel, the praise, and the thoughts of the future. And that's another pivotal point of the Haggadah, meaning the Haggadah is discussing not only we were the chosen people, but that we still are the chosen people. The second half of the Haggadah, after the meal, is stressing the fact that we're still headed somewhere. We're not done yet. It's not only about the past, it's also about the future. Where we speak about Hashem, come, rebuild Jerusalem. Reinstate our position in the world. The Haggadah is both angles. So, our story begins with Terach. You guys know the story of Terach, idol worshipper under Nimrod the king, and he has a son that they're told already a long time before he's born that he's going to be a problematic kid. When he's born, Nimrod demands, give me over that boy, I got to kill him because he's going to cause problems to us. And then Terach asks for 3 days to think it over, and then takes one of the slaves' babies and brings it to Nimrod, and Nimrod bashes the kid's brains on the ground and gives him a bunch of gifts. You heard it here or now?
No, where's it from?
I'm confused. So Nimrod thinks that he polished off Avram, and really, little baby Avram is growing up either in the house or, according to another Midrash, he grows up in a cave. And when Avram grows up, he is a child prodigy. He's not only very gifted, but he also has great oratory skills. He can move the masses like no one else could. And so he's going to be a tremendous threat to Nimrod, because Nimrod was the great orator before Avram came to the scene. Nimrod was able to move the masses to build the Tower of Babel. Nimrod was able to move the masses to rebel against the Creator. Not a long time has passed since the flood. He's been able to attain such military might. He is a great warrior and also a great general. And he is master of the world, really. He is king over the world. So Nimrod is the king, and he is the nemesis of Avram. Now Avram starts developing a following. And so Nimrod, as we know, has Avram thrown into the furnace. When Avram walks out of the furnace unscathed, so Nimrod is defeated. The world hears, because there were representatives from everywhere over there watching what was going on. Nimrod first tries to break Avram. He imprisons him for 10 years. And during that time, Avram writes his treatise. He writes 400 chapters about why be a monotheist, why a person should not be a pagan. And they try to blind Avram. They keep him in darkness for 3 years straight, and then expose him to broad daylight, which in those days was one of the ways they would blind people. And a miracle happens. He doesn't go blind. And then Nimrod has him thrown into the furnace. First he tries to break him. He threatens him and tells him, you know, bow to anything or we'll throw you into that furnace. And when Avram doesn't succumb, so then he has a public gathering to show everyone that he's the boss. And in front of all these kings and all the people, Avram is thrown into the furnace. And as we know, he walks out unscathed. And so the exact opposite happens.
What year is this?
So that's a good question. It doesn't say exactly. Avram was born in 1948. And in the year 2000, he started teaching the world about Hashem. did this happen in the year 1999? Exactly when this happened is a discussion in the Midrashim. Did it happen in the year 1951 when he was three?
So he's been around a long time.
Correct. And we'll pick up here, Bezat Hashem, next time.